And yay, Wiki's going to have to move servers again.
Why?
Our host, the host was consolidating its services, which essentially means we get to pay twice as much for the same stuff.
Consolidating is never a good word.
Well, maybe
it also means you're going to lose a bunch of shit again, right?
That shouldn't happen this time because somebody should be making competent database backups, right?
Yeah.
Like McFly or Scout, yeah?
Yeah.
Maybe on the next server you move to, it'll actually be up most of the time.
Well, this one, it's less a problem with the server itself and more a problem of Apache being a massive resource hog, PHP being a massive resource hog, and the wiki software itself also being a massive resource hog.
That's three massive resource hogs all on top of each other.
But enough about your mother.
And now it's time for another Superhero Time. Your hosts, XV.
Does Wayne Brady God get this car and choke a bitch?
Hey, Mickey.
Oh, there's a planet. I'll drive into it.
Paladin.
Doc Footage saves everything. Jim Curry.
Fort Max.
Tom Cruise will lead him.
And Ken.
Speaking of awkward pauses.
I'm XV, and this week you're listening to Superhero Time White. Just like low-fat food, the only difference is that it tastes much worse and gives you the runs later.
The explosive runs?
No, that would be fun. Hey Mickey is on assignment in Norway, but the rest of our cast couldn't quite escape. Absorbent and yellow and porous is he, it's Paladin.
Arr.
One of these things is not like the other, Fort Max.
Hello.
And our new semi-regular Ken.
Howdy.
You just couldn't escape, could you?
No. No matter how much life tried.
Prepare for suffering. So, we've been off for a whole extra week. Has stuff happened in that time?
Doesn't really seem like
yes.
it.
Yes.
A little bit.
Well, we know the Clawzord came out. A lot of people have found that at Toys R Us and Walmart, I think. Perhaps
have,
Mac would like to share some thoughts.
Well, Clawzord's actually fine. It's a good, solid toy. It transforms pretty much the exact same way as the Shinkinger toy.
Do you have the Shinkinger toy?
What?
Do you have the Shinkinger toy?
No.
Then how do you know?
This guy who has essentially step-by-step galleries of the transformations.
Cool. So anyway.
Yeah, it transforms pretty much the same way. It's solid, doesn't have the any of the gear gimmicks. However, it can still hold on to the discs with the claws. I don't know if that was just a feature that was just purposely built in, but the claws open and it can hold the discs and you can spin the discs.
So, does the face spinning gimmick still work?
Yes. It's there. You essentially turn a knob that doesn't look much like a knob at all to turn to the four different faces.
Reminds me of your mom, really.
And it transforms exactly like the Japanese toy and combines pretty much combines with the Samurai Megazord pretty much the same way the Japanese toys do, except for the yellow Zord not being able to form the symbol mode.
Oops.
They just have you leave them out in arm mode and just hanging down.
Yeah, I noticed that.
That looked pretty ugly.
It looks like it has something diseased hanging off of it.
So, again, your mom.
Well, yes.
So, was there other new samurai toys found, Fort Max?
Some people have... The Clawzord has been showing up. The Octozord has been showing up in some places. I haven't seen that yet, and all the 4-inch basic figures are starting to hit as well, but I haven't seen those either.
Has anybody actually found a Rita yet?
Some people have, yes. No one I know.
Well, that's something at least. But at least people are finding them so that... Yeah. Well, there's plenty of time then, isn't there?
But while the toy itself is great, the instructions are not. Bandai completely forgot to mention the lobster mode on the instructions. I don't know how they do that.
By being Bandai.
True. and also, the line art drawings are tiny, and while they are accurate, you've seen some of the Revenge of the Fallen toy instructions, they're kind of like that.
So they don't actually tell you anything?
Right.
Do they tell you anything that's actually outright wrong?
No.
Well, that's an upside at least, right?
At least not as far as I can tell.
Okay.
There could be things that are wrong that involve the Octozord, but I don't have the toy yet, so...
Right. Okay, so anything else on that front?
Yes. New okay. Retro Fires.
Oh, right.
Yes. The re-release of the Titan Megazord and new mold Zeo Megazord, which somehow manages to have less articulation than the Deluxe Zeo Megazord toy.
Something about that Zeo Megazord looks weird to me.
I think it's the feet.
I think it's the Phoenix wings being open. They're not
something about the arms and how... I don't know, how stretched out they are. It just doesn't look right.
Of course, the Deluxe toy was pretty damn articulated for a Deluxe Megazord, so...
Except for
especially
the
legs. At that time.
Well...
So what's wrong with the Retro Fire that it has less articulation? I mean, what does it have?
No elbows.
Well, let's see. The Deluxe toy could do the usual arms forward and back. Also could move the arms lift the arms up to the side. Had a upper arm swivel joint, had an elbow joint, and had a wrist swivel joint.
It really benefited from how they designed the Sphinx to transform into the upper body.
Yeah, and the Super Zeo Megazord had almost as much articulation. Only thing it was lacking was the wrists.
Hmm. So the Retro Fire doesn't have any elbows.
Apparently not.
Suck.
So it's not even as good as the original Retro Fires.
That's kind of a letdown after the wonder that was Jungle Pride.
Yeah.
Maybe the next one will be a little better.
One thing I forgot to mention about the Clawzord is it has two little posts that you can use to have any of the 4-inch figures right on it.
Uh-huh. Okay, so it sounds like the Zeo Retro Fire is kind of a wash.
Yeah.
Oh, well. It was nice while the line was still around.
I might still look for it.
Mm. Well, I'm certainly less interested than I was 5 minutes ago.
Oh, and also, apparently the Pink Ranger and Lord Zedd stylized figure is from the G2 line is finally out in the UK.
Of course it is.
As is the Power Up Red Ranger and Megazord set, and presumably whatever it was that came with, well, whatever the third toy that they had in the Dragonzord Battle Mode.
Watch, now the UK is going to get the whole Dragonzord.
Well, they did get the Centaurus Wolf Megazord during Mystic Force.
And they did get the three Microzords from RPM that we didn't get.
Of course, to be fair, in both of those cases, that was where there was existing toys that they could just dump on the UK because it worked, not where they'd be creating an entirely new one.
And they also did get the Sky Shift Morpher set and the additional Motomorph Zords that came with the
other two engines.
That came with the last two Dino Cells.
Lord. And didn't they also get the Retro Fires based on the other two RPM Zords?
I don't remember those coming out. I think that was just an Amazon UK listing that was never available.
So they almost came out there. So it still kind of counts.
Maybe sorta. Speaking of the power-up figures, at a Ross the other day, I actually found a power-up Green Ranger.
How much?
$4.
Well, that's where I found mine months ago. And also, actually, at the Ross, I also found, the clear Pink Ranger and clear Blue Ranger figures, which I hadn't ever seen before.
I forgot all about those Jolly Rancher Rangers.
I think Mickey tweeted a picture earlier of
he found the green Jolly Rancher Ranger.
That sounds so delicious when you say it like that.
Yeah. He'd be
however,
I, flavor.
No reports of the as of yet. Well, though I don't think anyone's ever found the solicited black and yellow Jolly Rancher Rangers.
Interesting. Okay, so, you know, somehow I get the feeling a black Jolly Rancher would be licorice flavor, and then I just have no
idea.
So moving on from that tangent, what's in the news otherwise?
There's an advertisement bouncing around for Forza Switches, or Forza, or how the hell they're pronouncing it. And surprise, there's going to be a lot of them.
Well, they are this year's Gaia Memory.
Yep.
Or medals.
And it's probably back to the Gaia Memory approach where the electronics are in the switches.
I would expect.
I mean, that's really the best way to do it when you're doing, the multi-form setup, because you're never constrained by whatever you initially program into the toy.
Yeah, plus they're actually worth something on their own, whereas metals, they're just...
coins.
Yeah.
And they're not even as good as coins because you can't put one into a shopping cart at Aldi and walk around with it. Although I have to admit to humming like birth driver noises to myself when I put a quarter in the shopping cart at Aldi. I am a sad little man. Ken is entirely too amused by that.
I just the mental image came to mind, and
so anyway,
and also some of the newer Gokaiger tiny roleplay toys are out.
Gokaiger, oh, the little like candy toy legend items.
Yeah,
yeah, the ones that nobody pays attention to
because they kind of suck.
Yes,
I'm pretty sure that manages to be smaller than the basic Dragon Dagger from last year.
I wouldn't be surprised.
And it doesn't have a lightsaber in its butt.
Well, neither did the basic one from last year either.
Yeah,
so.
That was the deluxe. The basic one was the one that was scaled about for Unicron to hold.
Damn.
So, anything... Did Go Jujin come out yet?
Yeah, it's been out.
It was released last Saturday.
Is yours on the way yet?
Yes, I got tracking for it. It probably won't show up in time for next week's show, though.
Pity.
I'll have something else to review, though.
Well, that's good.
Well, sort of. There is some other new Gokaiger merchandise on the horizon.
I'm just trying to figure out how to interpret that last comment. So, what on the horizon?
Well, for starters, there's an exclusive Gokaiger Ranger key chest.
Oh, crap. Thing.
Yes.
And it comes with a exclusive Alien Ranger key.
God, in a very Bandai sort of move.
Yes. So how do you get this key chest?
You probably have to bribe several people.
Who do I bribe?
21 centimeters by 26. That is rather small.
That's what she said.
Yeah. This is going to make many people sad.
What collecting Ranger keys usually does.
Yeah, trust me.
Collecting any of this stuff usually does.
Or more accurately, not being able to collect any of this stuff.
Perhaps we should simplify that to the desire to collect this stuff.
Yeah, I only just now realized that the fifth set of the keys came out, and I totally didn't even notice it coming out, so I missed it completely.
Yeah, really, with all this Ranger Key nonsense, I'm almost glad I wasn't able to get a Mobi Rates.
And me, on the other hand, I have a Mobi Rates, and I have a Gokai Cellular on the way.
Well, you know, if this ranger key collecting ever gets to be too stressful for you, Ken, I'd be happy to take your stuff off your hands for you.
Yes, I'm sure.
Except for the Gokai Cellular. I'm not really into that. Don't really need the Echo Warrior phone. Okay, so what else is up?
Well, we saw an image of an upcoming Ultimate Treasure for Gokaiger 2, based on the Goandjers.
Yes.
Yes.
I do enjoy this one.
Engine number 13.
And to complete the Goandjer homage, it comes with an engine soul.
A couple of them, it looks like.
Two of them.
It comes with a Speedor soul and a Gokai soul.
That's and not a Speedor soul.
It's like a Goan Gold key also.
So I wonder what you have to do to get the half and half gold and silver key. You know that's going to turn out to be an exclusive somewhere.
Oh, of course.
But yeah, it looks like it's a 13 on that. And not a speed or soul.
Right, engine 13, which they did 12 in Goandjer. It makes sense that Gokaiger would get the next in the line.
But will it have its own engine wrap?
Oh,
it could.
It better.
It seems like it has two different modes, like the Galion did.
Yeah, I'm just find it.
Yeah, one is looks like it's you know, the legs pop off and it rides it like Galion, and then the other one is just combined with the Gojujin.
Yeah, it seems to actually use the same combination scheme as Galion.
And it seems to let both Gokaio and Gojujin combine together. And I find it hilariously appropriate that the Goandjer's ultimate treasure is the power of cluster.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it really does.
At least as far as the official ones go, anyway.
Yeah.
Because there's worse clusters than G12. They're just, you know, fan pilings.
Yeah.
Remember Side-Eye Geki cluster? Which basically, if you took all the clowns out of the clown car and piled them on the top and sides, that's what you would get. I imagine that picture has long since disappeared into the ether, but...
Oh, it'll turn up again.
Maybe the engine rep for this engine will be the theme song for the combined form.
Oh! I could see them doing that, actually.
Moving along.
Oh, there's another Armor Plus Samurai Trooper up for pre-order.
Oh.
Which one this time?
The Inferno.
I'm trying so hard to ignore these.
Didn't we talk about Inferno on our last show?
Well, he wasn't up for order then.
Oh, okay, well. You know, it actually looks kind of plain with all that unpainted white plastic.
And the price is lower than expected, even for this, so I'm guessing Black Blaze does not come with it.
Well, that would obviously be sold separately. If at all.
Yeah.
What is the price? Oh, $8,400.
Yeah.
That's not terrible.
Before shipping and everything.
That's not crippling. What did Wildfire sell for?
But I think they were about the same, weren't they?
No, Wildfire was less than that.
Okay.
I think.
Well, I mean, of course it would be less than that since it's not an exclusive.
Hold on one second.
And somehow being all in black makes the Rio under figure look even skinnier. But they say black is very slimming.
Middleman price on Yokata is just for the first two are $87.50. So that would be after, you know, they tack on a bit. So it's probably actually around about the same.
But I mean, what was the original retail price for Wildfire?
Ooh, that I don't know.
Yeah, I was hoping Paladin would remember since he has one.
I think it was only 6,000 yen or so.
I was thinking it was something like that.
But that was a couple years back, right?
Last year?
When was it last year?
I don't know. I don't have one.
Okay. I remember hearing about that after I got back into all this stuff, and that was only about a year and a half ago.
You weren't around before then?
Oh, no. I was around. I just wasn't paying as much attention to some of the stuff.
Well, whatever. My memory doesn't go back that far. How long ago did Wildfire come out? Was that like the beginning of last year?
It might have been all the way back in 2009.
Well, if so, it was probably around the end, though.
Let's see, it was first announced May 2009, yeah.
Yeah, so round about right before I got back into the figures and stuff like that. Mm.
Okay, so it has been a while since they got around to releasing one of these.
Yeah. Right.
I guess they were too busy with their Tekkaman.
I'm guessing Rio didn't sell that well?
Well, the Tekkaman were awesome, too.
How many of those did you end up with?
Just the two major ones.
Any exclusives in that?
Yeah, two more exclusives and another on the way.
Good lord.
Sometimes it's good to have a little self-restraint.
I wouldn't know.
I don't think anything could say it better than Paladin's response, anyway. So, do we have any other news?
Yeah, one last bit just in time for our recording today. History of Power Rangers Episode 12.
Dino Thunder Part 2.
Which I was watching right before you called me in.
Well, technically it's both parts of Dino Thunder.
I just saw the tweet with Part 2 mentioned. Okay, well, if that's all of the news we have, there wasn't any Samurai episode lately, was there?
Thank God.
They're still on summer hiatus or whatever you want to call it.
They probably won't be back until August.
Hooray.
If it goes like, you know, previous Saban seasons. We can only hope, right?
I don't think we have any more hope for Samurai.
Maybe it'll turn around later.
Yeah. Keep telling yourself that.
Okay, so why don't we jump into the shows, because we have a lot piled up.
Just like your mom.
Ha ha.
Yo ho, me mighties, it's time for Pirate Sentai action.
So, the past 2 weeks of Gokaiger have continued the saga of Guy Ikari fanfic hero. Last week we continued to have demonstration of how Guy is good at everything and everyone loves him. After hooking Guy up to the key row, giving him on-the-spot access to the Ranger keys out of the chest, so that's how that works.
Yeah, they kind of actually explained how they do that.
That's like one
impressive
thing wouldn't have never thought they would actually would explain, and they just explained it. I was like, oh, okay.
So after that, Guy takes over cooking the meal for the day from Doc, to much acclaim from the others. Apparently, Doc and Genta share a common problem of bland food. Already unsure about their new number 6, Doc is really not feeling the love with Guy steamrolling over one of his important jobs on the ship. Making things worse, Guy volunteers to do the grocery shopping as well. So Doc just keeps seeing more and more of his responsibilities taken away from him by the spastic new guy.
I do kind of like, though, that they kind of took an effort to set this all up, like, episodes beforehand. It didn't just come out of blue, like, out of thin air.
Like how Guy wrote Doc out of the series?
Basically, yes. Like, they started from the very, very start, like, as soon as he walked up to them.
Yes. So, over at the Zangak, Gil has himself selected an action commander. Amazing, he actually did some work.
This will not end well.
So this one has the special ability of yanking the bones out of people. Sadly, he is neither named Bone Steel nor portrayed by Scott McNeil. But for the purposes of this discussion, I will refer to him as Bone Stealer. Because if he actually had a name, I don't remember it. So Bone Stealer goes about the task of turning people into useless lumps by fishing, well, not their actual bones, but something like the spirit of their bones out of their bodies or something, I don't know. So it's all very metaphysical or something, I don't know.
So they have no motivations and...
Yeah, he's turned the people into sleepy layabouts. Guy and Doc discover the attack during their very tense grocery shopping trip. Doc calls the others for backup, and he and Guy transform and engage the monster. Guy, naturally, is doing great plowing through dump troops, but Doc is too distracted and easily gets tossed off the roof they're fighting on.
Oh, well.
Poor Doc.
As he's about to be swarmed on the street, Guy swoops down and saves the day.
Because Guy is awesome and because this is his story.
The other Gokaigers arrive to help deal a mighty beating. As the Core 5 decide to go on, Guy is conflicted over which Go-On Wings member to become. Silver, of course, matches his color, but being originally a girl, he's kind of thinking to go for gold instead. And suddenly, he finds himself in a big white space with the image of the wings. When he asks them what he should pick, and then thinks offhandedly about how if he could use them both, it probably wouldn't even be a problem, he's snapped back to reality by Doc yelling at him for spacing out, but finds that his gold and silver keys have now combined into one.
Creating the Luna Metal Ranger.
Yes, we're presented with Go-On Double or something.
Yeah.
And I will again state my disappointment that has appeared on message board and probably Twitter that the new half-and-half suit they made did not get a skirt halfway around the side.
One thing I noticed about that suit, when he's pointing at the camera, that glove, you can tell, has obviously gotten a lot of usage because it is really worn out. It's like they took, like, damaged pieces of the old costumes and sewed them together.
It's weird. It's something I remember seeing a lot in, like, old Power Rangers episodes where, you know, the gloves and the boots always look like they've been heavily worn even early in the series.
Yeah, but this glove looked like it was about ready to fall apart.
Guess I wasn't looking that close. So everybody's kind of dumbfounded by Guy's latest achievement, but Aime has the presence of mind to start the applause.
As he uses the double jet daggers.
Yeah, we actually have now gotten three names for the wings blade weapon. First it was the rocket dagger. Then when daggers became kind of distasteful after the stabbing attacks in Japan, it was the rocket booster for a while. And now Guy has misnamed them the jet daggers. Apparently he's not the Sentai geek he thought he was. Since he couldn't even get the name right. And using a double helping of Mission 6, he clears the dump troops before the other Gokaijers can even turn around, and then flies straight into one-on-one with Bone Stealer. 4 out of 5 Gokaijers are impressed with these moves.
Gee, I wonder who the other one is. That's not.
But even as super cool as Guy is, he's not enough to stop the monster alone, and as it pushes him aside, it blasts the other Gokaijers. Doc, again, is distracted by how awesome Guy is, and doesn't have time to defend himself from the attack, only being saved from a direct hit when Aime jumps in front of the blast. Bone Stealer then uses this opening to take the bones out of Marvelous, Milfy, Aime, and Joe. Guy tries again to fight the monster himself, but is pushed back, and Bone Stealer escapes, promising to come back for the rest of their bones later. Because, you know, if he took them all now, there wouldn't be much of a story left.
Right.
On the galleon, the others are lazy and completely apathetic. Of course, in the case of Milfy, that's probably not too far from the truth. I figure that if they can defeat Bone Stealer, everybody will go back to normal. And he's confident that he and Doc can pull it off together, obviously indicating he has not watched the show so far. Doc tells him that he really ought to go alone since he'll only get in Guy's way anyway.
Which could be true.
Well, Doc then goes into his spilling his guts mode and explains that being around Guy, who is so amazing and cool, he feels like a complete failure in comparison. This makes Guy a little bit sad and he leaves to go get to work. Doc continues talking about his feelings to Navi, who surprises him by explaining that Guy thinks Doc is amazing for the way he can look after the rest of the crew's needs in a way he'd never be able to manage. Doc starts to think again about the way Guy was able to create a special transformation, and then is struck with inspiration, just as he's finished choking Navi out.
Poor Navi. And then he just drops Navi on the floor.
But it's just in time, as Bone Stealer is on the move again. Guy is already battling the monster, but isn't making any progress. Doc runs in with guns blazing, and after proving he's not suited for these heroic battle charges by having to stop and catch his breath, he transforms and presents his wacky idea to Guy. Combine all 15 Ranger keys he has into one. And even Guy thinks this is nuts.
Yeah, that'll turn out fine.
Doc evidently also has a poor concept of math, because he says there's probably no difference between 2 and 15 anyway. So Guy pulled out all of his Ranger keys while Doc holds Bone Stealer back, and Guy again is in the white space with all 15 previous extra Rangers. He appeals to the spirits of the past Rangers to let their powers combine so he can be Captain Planet. Wait. No,
that's more or less. All right, that's more. Run with that.
Anyway, in the meantime, Doc transforms into Bioman and Flashman to try to hold out a little longer against Bone Stealer.
Because whenever he transforms, he fights better. So.
Yeah.
It's the best Doc can hope for.
What was that thing he used as Flashman? The Prism Kaiser? Which was basically just green blocks over his arms?
Yep.
Gotta love those old-timey special effects. So after a tense moment with the previous extras, they give Guy their combined power, and in his hands, 15 Ranger keys transform into one big anchor key, which he uses to transform into gold mode, possibly the goofiest power-up ever.
And I still love it despite that. Or but maybe because of that.
Hard to say.
No, goofiest ever is still the end complete form.
Kamen Rider slot machine. So goofy as it is, it's actually pretty effective, and he cuts down Bone Stealer with little effort, finishing him off with a reasonably cool final wave.
Or 15 final waves, depending on how you look at it.
Well, whatever. One final wave of 15, it's all the same, right?
That's what Doc thinks.
Yeah, that's what Doc taught me.
So why bother?
The stolen bones return to their owners, and Guy is exhausted from the effort of using the gold mode power. But in the process, he's earned Doc's friendship, as they share a quick fist bump. But then it's time to fire the saddle lasers. But Giant Bone Stealer has no time to go on a rampage. The galleon sails in, firing all guns, because the other Gokaigers are really looking forward to some payback.
And I don't blame them.
Gokaio and Goju Rex are formed up to double-team Bone Stealer, and Gojujin finishes the job all by itself with its triple attack. Back on the galleon, Doc and Guy are getting along now, and Guy is well satisfied with Doc's cooking. Marvelous is surprised when Guy reveals the amount of planning Doc puts in their meals, but the good feelings are interrupted as Milfy notices that Guy has been added to the Gokaiger Wanted poster, with a bounty 20 times higher than Doc's. Oh well.
Poor Doc. There's not much else to say besides that.
Well, Doc is coming up in the world. He's up to 5,000 now instead of the, 100 he was at in the first episode.
Yeah.
That's true. But everybody else is also raising by the same amount, so...
It doesn't matter, though. Doc is worth 50 times more now than he was at the start.
Well, yes, this is true.
Of course, the thing that'll really break Doc is when the Gosagers get higher bounties than him.
Oh, sad Doc. So in this week's episode, Guy is introduced to the concept of the hunt for the ultimate treasure. Navi gives her usually cryptic navigation clue, this time about warriors of some hidden forest or some shit like that. And everyone is stumped, except Guy.
Except Guy.
He figures out right away.
Because he is awesome and cool.
And he also has a Super Sentai guidebook.
I like in the background, Doc was kind of pantomiming, like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Doc is eventually able to figure out from the pictures in Guy's book the likely location of the hidden forest, and the team heads out for a hike. Doc has prepared a batch of donuts for the Gingaman in hopes of getting past any trouble that might arise, what with them being space pirates, the same way the Gingaman's previous enemies were. But Marvelous decides to have a donut for himself under the box. Doc chases after him to get it back.
Only to find they are literally running in circles.
Yes, after a short time, Milfy notices they've passed by the same patch of flowers.
Just like an Atari game.
And proving the point, Marvelous and Doc run up from the opposite direction they took off. So Guy figures as a result of the barrier around the forest, as everybody goes on guard in case of attack or something.
When suddenly the barrier breaks open and spits out the Black Knight.
Yeah, how about that? And he's followed quickly by Bosco and that stupid monkey. After a quick explanation of their history with Bosco for Guy's benefit, Black Knight catches Luca identifying themselves as the Gokaigers, and Guy recognizes him as Hyuga. Guy forgets where he is for a bit as he introduces himself and asks for an autograph.
To autograph his guidebook specifically.
Yes.
Yes, of course he does.
Well, what else would you have a Sentai character autograph? It's not like he has
a Ranger key? Not like he has one.
Well, he doesn't.
That'd be a little small to sign anyway. Maybe he should get everybody he meets to sign his Gokai Cellular instead.
Well, it's big enough.
It's very true.
Yeah, Guy has the Gokai bag phone. So Bosco pulls out yet more Ranger keys and plays them through his trumpet. And seriously, where is my toy of that?
Tamashii.
Not yet.
Eventually, but it's unavoidable.
Well, actually, it'd probably be easier to get if it was that at this point.
Well, versus not being able to get it at all. Like
exactly.
So the Gokaisers are attacked by Magi Mother, Deka Master, and Wolzard Fire. Aim tells Guy to get Hyuga somewhere safe as the rest of them transform and start fighting the copies. Left to themselves, Hyuga hears Guy talk about how he's new at this ranger business and probably isn't nearly as good as Hyuga or the other veteran warriors like him. Hyuga tells Guy to give the Gokai Cellular to him, and he'll fight again instead. Guy is conflicted. As much as he respects and admires Hyuga and feels that he'd be a better fighter, he still wants to be Gokai Silver, too.
I find it really appropriate that they tried to give the Gokai Cellular to Hyuga.
The guy that everybody complained was left out.
And the probably the only guy to portray two different heroes in two different Sentais.
Well, yes, there's that.
And anyway, Black Knight doesn't have a morpher of any type.
Just a sword.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, that's why for Lost Galaxy they had to steal the Die Ranger morpher. So the Gokaisers aren't doing great against Bosco's puppets, while Marvelous is trying to fight Bosco directly, only to be blocked by Sally. But it's okay, because he shoots her out of a tree without even looking. Stupid monkey. The other four are defeated and sent flying over a cliff, but not entirely unnoticed. Someone else who doesn't bother introducing himself pulls the Gokaisers out of the river. As he's hauling Doc up, he's happy to see Joe, Aim, and Milfi have woken up. Doc gives him a box of surely soggy donuts by this point as thanks for the rescue, and the Gokaisers dash off to hook up with Marv and Guy.
One thing I have to say there, the guy playing Ryoma really has not aged well.
Not nearly so well as Hyuga did, no.
No. And he's supposed to be the younger brother.
And also not as well as, what's his name that was, Red Racer.
Yes.
Of course, I think Red Racer was helped by the pants. Man, those pants.
Oh, well, maybe the donuts will help him feel better.
I need to go watch that Car Ranger episode again. That was great. Anyway, as Guy is about to hand over the cellular to Hyuga, Bosco shoots it out of his hand. Hyuga tells Bosco that nobody can have the ultimate power unless the Ginga Man freely give it to them, and he's not handing it over to Bosco for sure. But Bosco tells him he's a little bit mistaken on that, and demonstrates by playing on his trumpet, seemingly in reverse, sucking the power right out of Hyuga's body. Bosco almost succeeds in capturing the Ginga Man power, but Marvelous arrives and interrupts the process. Marvelous doesn't approve of using such means to obtain the powers, or at least doesn't approve of doing so when it's not to his benefit. Hard to say, really. But Bosco is more concerned with not fighting directly and summons the image of Hyuga's Black Knight form to battle in his place. Guy is ready to transform and help fight, but as he's running for the cellular, he remembers being unsure about continuing or giving Hyuga the power. As he stops and hesitates partway, Marvelous is defeated with the reappearance of Bosco's earlier puppets, and Hyuga decides that it's up to him if Guy won't act. Bosco advises Marvelous that it would be smarter to give up at this point, but Marv simply responds that being a pirate has nothing to do with making smart choices.
Something Guy should know very well by now.
It's about following your dream and that only an idiot would give it up. Marvelous's words move Guy and make him remember why he's Gokai Silver in the first place. Well, at least the second reason he's Gokai Silver. The first is that it's written that way. With his determination renewed, he runs ahead of Hyuga and body slams him away from the Gokai Cellular. And I'm barely exaggerating on that.
I don't think you're exaggerating at all. He knocks this injured guy down on the ground on all these jagged rocks.
He's profuse in his apologies, but explains that he has to be Gokai Silver because it's the dream he wants to follow and what he feels like he needs to do. He won't give that up to anyone, and he wants to use it to protect the world just as well as all those past heroes would. Guy is surprised when Hyuga does not punch him in the face, but instead appears happy and reveals he'd been waiting quite a while for Guy to finally say so. Satisfied with Guy's resolve, Hyuga gives him his blessing. And just in time, too, because the other Gokaijus have finally caught up to Marvelous and Guy, and the big fight is renewed. Following the spirit of the day, the main five use the Gingaman keys, and are able to leverage their attacks and powers to quickly defeat the images of Wizard Fire, Deckamaster, and Magimother. Guy escalates to gold mode and defeats Black Knight, and the deactivated Ranger key floats over to Hyuga's waiting hands. But unfortunately, before the Gokaijers get to collect the other keys used today, Sally swoops in and snatches them up.
Stupid monkey.
Bosco unleashes a moon droid to cover his escape. Marvelous wants to chase Bosco, but Guy decides to take down the giant robot monster thing first. The others call out Shink and Gokaio, and it and Gojujin quickly defeat Suki.
Are the things that Sally's summoning supposed to be referencing anything? Because they seem like really detailed and intricate things just to be only on screen for, like, 2 minutes.
It's nothing I recognize.
Yeah, it just...
But it I thought that was odd, too.
Well, it just seems like because...
That's the second time they've used it.
Yeah, the mecha battles aren't long, so it's this really detailed suit they're using for only a couple minutes.
Actually, Fort Max, first time it was a water droid or something. It was a different design. So after the battle, Hyuga says it would be better to keep all the Sentai powers in one place for the time being and entrust the Black Knight key to Guy, as well as granting the Gokaijers the Gingaman ultimate power.
Whatever that is.
Yeah, why didn't they show the Gingaman ultimate power? Are they just implying that it's the Black Knight?
Because they have no toy.
Well, I think that would be the real reason, yes. Maybe it will show up as a throwaway sometime later with, you know, like fire and flowers and stuff shooting out of Gokaio's compartments.
Yeah, that works.
Or maybe it just transforms the Gokai Galleon into Terra Venture.
Interesting notion. So as the Gokaijers head off to the next treasure hunt, Hyuga and Ryoma talk about how the newest Sentai are themselves space pirates, and Hyuga asks if he still can't trust them anyway. Ryoma says he thinks it'll be fine, especially if Hyuga has decided that they're worthy. Besides, Ryoma wants to trust them anyway after seeing Joe and the others take off to help Marv and Guy after he pulled them from the river earlier. The soggy donuts he's still carrying around probably didn't hurt either.
Now,
I wonder if he...
Those donuts were awesome. I mean, it looked like they were just glued. They were like stuck onto Dawn's helmet at some point.
And so that's the weeks of Gokaiger. And it was the usual what?
But an awesome kind of what?
I don't know. I'm still kind of stuck on how self-insertion Guy is coming across.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can understand why women would see that, but I can see what they're going for with them because they just want to.
I do hope they tone it down a little bit.
Well,
yeah, he's stolen every episode he's been in so far.
Ginta kind of did the same thing for his first four episodes too. Back in Shinken.
I didn't really get the same sense off of Ginta though.
Well, the first four episodes did focus on him because the second episode was where Takeru just kicked them out. Then the one with him and Ryunosuke, and then the one where he got his mecha introduced.
Okay, but in that case, though, it wasn't where everybody always liked him basically from the beginning. It was impressed with every single thing he ever did.
Well, this is true also.
They just like the tuna.
I mean, it's okay to put several focus episodes in a row on the newly introduced number 6, but it can be done without being like this is being.
Yeah, I can understand what you know mean there. Yeah.
Yeah,
but it looks like next week they're shifting the focus a little bit.
Well, next week is Bokenger.
The preview implies they're shifting the focus, but there's no evidence to say that Guy won't come in and steal that episode too.
Well, the preview seems to indicate that Marvelous and Boak and Red get separated from the others, so.
And then probably Guy to the rescue.
I do like his answer to the fact that there is no sixth Kakar Ranger, though.
What was that?
He just pulled up the Shurikencher key.
Ah. Well, yeah, that works too, doesn't it? It's about the closest thing to a sixth ninja.
Though what I want to know is whose transformation pose he's going to use.
Well, stay tuned and find out next time.
Like, will he use, like, Gavon, the Gavon pose, or who knows?
His own?
I wonder when the exploding tinsel behind him will return. Guy needs to do his full-length introduction like that again.
He might.
And you know what the introduction was based off of, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Go-Ranger theme.
Oh.
Yeah, because he was calling out the colors of the entire team.
Well, I never saw the Go-Ranger theme. Or Go-Ranger. Okay, so how about we move on to O's?
Okay.
You know, come on.
We left off going into episode 40, right? Where they're all under surveillance and being tied up by ribbons and shit.
And Shingo's body got hurt when Ankh dumped it. So AG's hesitant to let Ankh get back on Shingo.
God, that's
isn't that fun how that works? But, you know, since Ankh is so willing to just dump it wherever he's standing when he needs to go and fly off and do something else, AG's understandably apprehensive about continuing this arrangement.
I'm surprised that Shingo doesn't have brain damage at this point.
Do we know he doesn't?
I was going to say, wait a little bit and we'll see about that. Satanaka suggests that they move Shingo so they can tend to his injuries, and Goto says it would probably be faster if they let Ankh possess him again.
Jeez, Goto.
Well, he's right.
He's right, it's just...
Well, it's not like Shingo was in the process of waking up and he was going to hit him with a brick to knock him out so Ankh could ride him again.
Carry on. I'll be over here.
So the turkey jerk yummy is increasing control over the neighborhood. Kazali questions little Ankh about why, after setting loose that yummy, he's just sitting around not doing anything with it. Little Ankh says that he's just biding his time. Ankh still has O's with him, but sooner or later he'll have his chance, even if it's just a small one. Kazali says that he's even starting to sound like Ankh now, to which he responds that, well, he is Ankh. Using special control feathers, the yummy now has the ability to turn people into puppets, more or less. And so under the control of its host as well. With this power, they make the police crack down on the people in the neighborhood, and eventually come to the restaurant to forcibly evict AG and Ankh.
Chiyoko kicks him back out again.
Chiyoko resists, but AG doesn't want to cause her trouble, and he takes Ankh to leave willingly. But Chiyoko's not exactly satisfied, and a small fight breaks out between her and the police. That can't end badly.
No. Not at all.
AG and Ankh track the yummy's nest to the large house owned by the new association chairman. Just about then, they're assaulted by ribbons. AG transforms and breaks through the gate. Inside, a squad of police are standing guard over the house, and AG isn't willing to fight his way through regular people being mind-controlled, much as Ankh might urge him to. As another wave of ribbons makes for them, AG and Ankh are shielded by a Kandroid. Seems that at some point, Goto learned to be a bit badass and is perched on top of the wall around the house.
The Amazing Spider Goto?
Well, he doesn't have a giant robot somebody stole, though.
That's because someone stole it.
Ankh knows that the yummy's host is inside the house, but they can't get close to it.
So they just send in an army of Kandroids.
Well, first they use some freaky combination of Hopper, Peacock, and the long-forgotten Eelcandroid. And they've cobbled together some sort of video surveillance system to see over top of the courtyard wall.
I'll give them that.
Yeah, I have no idea how that particular combination is supposed to do anything like that, but, you know.
It works because it does.
Because they hadn't sold enough Eelcandroids yet.
Well, if they would have kept them around for a while, maybe they would have. Wonder how those Tiger Ride vendors are doing for them.
It's the last time we've seen a ride vendor, actually.
The end of this episode.
Oh, right. It's been a couple weeks.
AG won't fight through the human shield, but figures Yummy has to leave eventually in order to get the food-like manifestation of the host's desire to bring back. Goto gets the idea and gets several Candroids out of a nearby ride vendor, in order to monitor the movements around the house.
Yeah, we didn't... Never mind. Go ahead.
Well, it's not entertainment unless you argue with me, Ken.
He didn't ride it! I mean, it's actual function.
Wait a little while.
Right. Well, it's not... Well, it's like down the street or something. Not far to ride.
Right.
Still!
AG and Ankh wait around in the park for a little while before taking a walk and ending up along the riverside. AG is reminded of their early times together, which apparently we didn't get to see, involving how they lived outside, and Ankh was very rough for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't sound wrong out of context.
That doesn't sound right in context.
Ankh says that AG's getting a bit full of himself, since he seemed to think he could force Ankh out of Shingo's body if he wanted to. With a little flash of purple in his eyes, AG pretty confidently tells Ankh that he really could. And I don't think he's wrong, either. Ankh just reminds him, though, that getting too free with the power is the same path King O's went on 800 years ago. And we all
and
know
look how well that turned him. Out.
Right about then, Hina arrives with some food for them. But instead of being grateful to see her, Ankh charges her and tries again to kill her, but several times cannot go through with it. Breaking the tension of the moment, Chiyoko arrives, announcing the restaurant got shut down as a result of her brawl with the police. She figures they should just have Ankh's birthday party there right now.
Yeah, because that's a great idea to round things off.
The party goes on, and Ankh looks intensely uninterested. But at least he's not trying to murder anybody at the moment.
Until they put that hat on his head.
Well, you can see it in his eyes then, yeah. Meanwhile, Hina's reflecting to herself about why she's let Ankh live in her brother all this time. It's not my fault, it's the way they wrote it. As the sun goes up, androids are still watching over the chairman's house, and Goto is in Kogami's office waiting for his gorilla to react. Again, not my fault.
This is more entertaining than the episode was, actually.
Back at the riverside, AG has a flash of inspiration and realizes that the food the Yummy is supposed to be collecting for the host is actually the surveillance of the neighborhood. Therefore, with the cameras in place, the Yummy never actually has to leave. All the food is being delivered all the time. Just like Domino's.
Except it doesn't suck.
Well... sending the Candroids to wreck the video cameras, the Yummy ends up being drawn out of its nest. Ankh and AG take off to go fight. Satanaka arrives at work, and Goto is nowhere to be seen. But instead, there's a note waiting for her, offering 5% of Goto's salary in exchange for her to be ready to go any time. Satanaka is not impressed.
Satanaka is never impressed.
Except with that bowl of chili that time.
Well, yes.
So several Candroids are already attacking the Yummy.
When Goto comes in on a ride vendor.
Yes.
Never mind. I forgot about that.
Yes, Goto on his ride vendor, AG and Ankh arrive at about the same time to confront the Yummy and transform. Birth provides Oz with fire support at a distance while Oz actually remembers the Metagelber exists and slashes away at Turkey Jerk Yummy. Goto runs out of ammo, and without the cover fire, the Yummy takes the advantage over them again. Oz presses a counterattack, and Berth is struck by a flying metal drum for the Buster. Satanaka flatly, as ever, explains that's all 5% will get him. She then loads her own Buster, and they cover Oz again. The Yummy clothes itself in a ribbon dome thing, and AG calls out for Rata Rata medals. It ends the fight with a quick scanning charge.
Hey, kids, the remember them?
30 episodes ago? 20 episodes, hasn't it?
I think it's longer than that.
It's been a while.
Yeah, almost like 30.
Now, I forget. Has AG actually called out the specific name of a combination before?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I thought it seemed a little weird when he said Rata Rata.
Well, the bell kind of does say it.
Well, yeah.
And
yeah,
sings
I know,
it.
I know the bell. Yeah, but, you know, Ankh told him to never mind the songs.
yeah, AG's never actually named the combos, I don't think.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He just repeats what the belt says.
Right. So the chairman's wife wakes up from the Yummy spell and starts to freak out over all the expensive video equipment her husband bought.
And then treats him even worse than before.
Yeah, she won't believe that she told him to do it.
Poor bastard.
AG and Ankh stand outside the courtyard gate, overhearing the commotion inside. And AG asks if it's okay to leave them like that, but Ankh figures it doesn't matter as long as they keep to themselves. AG's
Which is
fine
pretty
with
much
that.
Ankh's reaction to almost everyone.
AG's fine with that, but probably because he's unaware that the chairman is having his head smashed repeatedly into a table, and will probably die soon.
Speaking of brain damage.
So everything is back to normal. The restaurant's open again. AG and Ankh are back to living there, and Hina remembers the present she originally bought for Shingo. She runs ahead to give it to Ankh, but Ankh blows her off to start with. But at least this time he doesn't put his hand around her throat.
Baby steps.
But he relents and eventually takes the gift before he storms off. Ankh goes back into the apartment and is ambushed by little Ankh. Lefty says that people tend to drop their guard after a win, and this was the best time to come get what was his. AG senses the greed's presence and rushes to the rescue, but it's a little too late. Lost Ankh is sucking all the metals out of Ankh's arm, and as hard as he tries to hold onto the last of himself, those last three red core metals fly out, and Ankh vanishes from Shingo's arm. Lost Ankh is then hovering in the air, and as Hina and AG rush outside, they see him begin to regenerate the missing bits of himself. Finally, an Ankh with both wings.
And the metal count reverts to 5, but then, oh wait, no it didn't.
Yeah, because that's never happened before. Oh, wait.
You know, I'll be sad to see Oz go, but I definitely won't miss this stupid dark helmet thing they keep doing with the metal count.
Yeah.
Okay, so for episode 41, we pick up immediately where 40 leaves off with Lost Ankh standing tall, hovering over the restaurant, being almost completely regenerated. But he realizes there's still a red core metal missing. Realizing AG or Hina must have it, he tries to kill them with fire. But before long, his right hand starts resisting him, showing that some part of Ankh is still in there fighting to survive. Either that or he just doesn't know, his right hand doesn't know what his left hand is doing.
Or just like regular Ankh, he just can't cross that line to and kill someone.
Or he's had a traumatic brain injury and his left and right sides function independently.
Well, he is missing half of his head, so...
Well, that would account for that last core metal, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
AG uses the moment of hesitation and runs for safety with Hina, eventually ending up in some tunnel place thing at the bottom of some stairs.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Hina revealed that Ankh slipped one of his Hawk medals into her hand before Lost Ankh absorbed him. Ankh arrives to retrieve the final core medal, and AG transforms into the only option he has left, Puto Terra.
And gets his ass kicked.
Yeah, with Lefty having so many of his own core medals now, AG can barely keep the fight even.
That was really kind of a cool fight, though, I thought. Just
so how many does he have? 8? Or is it less than that?
Ooh, Ankh?
Yeah.
We don't know how many Lost Ankh had in the first place.
This is true.
That's true. I would assume he has 9 until something tells us otherwise.
Well,
eight.
I was going to say.
Yeah, 8. I know. The purple medals have me confused since there's a full set of 10 of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, unless something says otherwise, we should assume that Ankh has all but one core metal now. Original Ankh again fights Lost Ankh's control, forcing him to retreat in order to get himself back in order. AG regrets letting Lost Ankh get away without rescuing their Ankh, and sends a Hawk Kandroid to scout around and try to find where he's hiding. Back at the restaurant, Chiyoko finds what seems to be a much cheerier, more agreeable Ankh, who corrects her by identifying himself as he and his brother Shingo.
It looks like Chiyoko kind of took a beating.
I think that's left over from her fight with the police.
Yeah, that's just a little bit troubling. Looks like she fell down some stairs.
Well, that's the story she's going with anyway. Domestic abuse.
It's kind of remarkable how Ankh and Shingo are the same guy, yet look almost nothing alike when circumstances differ.
Hair color and hairstyle seem to make a lot of difference.
Plus, I think Ankh probably has makeup.
Well, yeah, Ankh has mascara or something.
Well, and I think the actor is just good at wild facial expressions.
Yeah
that makes a big difference, too.
Yeah, the actor's good, so that helps.
So Eiji and Hina arrive back at the restaurant, and Chiyoko tells Hina she has a special visitor. She and Eiji are both surprised and relieved to see Shingo awake and fully recovered. He surprises them further by producing the metal case, with many of the presumed missing metals inside. Haha, fooled you.
Again.
Because we didn't see that coming from last week's preview.
He explains that he basically remembers everything from when Ankh possessed him, including Ankh quickly hiding the metals when Lost Ankh attacked him.
Survival instinct right to the end.
Ankh certainly got a lot done in those 15 seconds. Shingo is grateful to Eiji for keeping Hina safe all that time and wants to help fight the same way Ankh did, apparently by threatening to kill everyone.
And gorging on ice cream, probably.
Eiji's a little freaked out being used to Shingo's face displaying anger, hatred, and contempt.
Those are his good qualities.
The three of them go to an empty lot so Shingo can practice his backup for O's.
An empty lot that was previously used by passing through Kamen Riders.
They quickly learn that Shingo does not possess Ankh's magical ability to throw little coins hundreds of feet and have them not spread out like a shotgun. As Eiji is running around to pick up these scattered medals, he suggests just going one at a time for the moment. Shingo agrees, and after studying the stage situation involving fire, he decides on the best set of medals to do the job. Shingo tosses Eiji the Shamu medal, which he easily catches.
Cheetah medal, which hits him in the face.
Yeah, Shingo throws the cheetah medal next, and since Eiji hasn't had time to do anything with the first medal, he catches it with his head. But what Shingo lacks in throwing ability, he makes up for by understanding the strategy of mixed combinations, and his suggested groupings are super effective. And we get several named semi-combos.
This episode really demonstrates how very inconvenient the O's system is.
Yes.
Hey,
as we'll see later, but...
meanwhile, Kogami, Satanaka, and Goto are watching via Hopper TV.
And listing off the exclusive combinations because there just aren't enough Tamashii Web exclusive O's Figo Arts yet.
Correct. Kogami thinks that it's generally positive that Shingo has recovered and is no longer possessed by Ankh, but worries about the other situation wherein Eiji is carrying around a bunch of core metals in his body.
And Goto actually seems not necessarily concerned, but interested in the fact that, you know, Ankh's kind of, you know, latched to this killer monster. It's kind of weird. It's not necessarily a concern, but he's the only one that's actually noting it.
Yeah. Left Ankh is still struggling with his other half, and Maki comes to talk to him about the new developments.
With a pair of umbrellas.
And yeah. Oh, the doll.
And then, of course, the doll's umbrella gets closed between shots later on.
And at some point, Maki ends up making a new yummy out of a pile of ice.
That he carried in a thermos. And then dumped on the ground.
And it somehow creates a dinosaur-themed yummy.
Sure, why not?
Well, that's about as much sense as the other purple yummies make.
I guess.
He did make the pteranodons out of What? Candlestick?
Okay. So with their training finished for the day, Eiji goes with Hina and Shingo back to their apartment for dinner. Eiji observes how Hina finally has her life back to normal and decides that he can't let Shingo or Hina put themselves at risk for him anymore. After he leaves their apartment, he goes back to the restaurant to get his underwear and leaves a thank you note for Chiyoko. Again, no problems out of context there. he's determined to rescue Ankh by himself. About that time, the Kandroids he sent out earlier fix Ankh's location, and Eiji sets off to go and effect a rescue. Goto catches him on the way, thanks to monitoring the Kandroid activity. And Eiji tries to discourage him from coming along, especially since he's out to help Agreed. But Goto says that what's important is that he's helping out Eiji.
And points out that Date would never forgive him if he let Eiji die.
Nice that they mentioned Date.
Yes. Then just forget that he existed.
Yeah, that'd be much more convenient anyway.
Yes.
So as they near where Ankh is roosting, the yummy stops them. Eiji and Goto transform together, intent on clearing the roadblock. And despite early effectiveness at hitting the yummy's weak spots, their success is kind of short-lived. Berth holds the yummy at bay while Oz goes for a different semi-combo. But since he usually doesn't have to decide which metals to use in what cases, he can't figure out what he should choose. The yummy presses his attack and blows Oz back, scattering metals everywhere. As he scrambles to collect them all again, another attack breaks the transformation, and Eiji is left to try to pick himself up off the ground. Berth charges the yummy into the side of a cliff, calling for Eiji to go and find Ankh. As he makes his way through a forest, getting closer, he finds Dr. Maki waiting for him. Maki uses his magic connection to the purple metals to immobilize Eiji, telling him to give up on Ankh, and saying that it's time they discuss the matter of those metals they have between them.
And that's where the episode ends.
Dun, dun, dun! Cliffhanger.
And it looks like next week they actually remember the whole Putoterra is kind of not a good thing.
Aspect. Well, we'll see how that worked out.
Yes, well, they haven't really mentioned it for several episodes since he magically gained control of it, so.
Right.
Well, except for all the times they have mentioned it.
Well, I mean, what I mean is that it... Well, not necessarily, because the last time he used it when, let's see, what was it?
The previous...
Well, yeah,
that
no,
very, this very episode, Saving Hina?
Yeah, that part he did. I'm talking about when he used it against the turkey yummy, it just didn't really seem to be that big of a deal then.
Because presumably he's gotten control of the metals, but
yeah.
Apparently that's not quite right.
Or yeah. Because he lost both of those fights, it didn't just have the opportunity to take control of him.
This is true. But yeah, Hina brought it up in this episode, but it doesn't seem like it's been that much of a focus or that anybody's really been that as concerned about it as they were.
Well, they will be after this time.
Yeah, hopefully.
Plus, also, he's been kind of avoiding Dr. Maki for a while.
This is also true.
Well, and I think what's happening next time is that for the first time since he started using that combination, he's going, you know, full Dino Rage out with it. Where the wings on his head and the tail and everything. You know, that was one of the advertised features of Putoterra before we ever saw it, that there'd be some kind of dinosaur transformation involved.
Yeah.
You know, that Magmatron mode.
Right.
Magmatron was such a terrible toy.
Orgysaurus.
I'm talking about the robot mode, though. Just so static. But anyway...
Well, it sure is a Japanese Beast Wars toy.
Well, it's not like it's break.
Well, like I said, those things are either completely static or you have an animal that's essentially a shell around the robot.
Hello, big convoy. Okay, so let's take a break. Paladin has a relevant review for us this week for our power playback. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
From Beast Wars to Zeta Gundam, FigureReviews.com features a library of in-depth action figure reviews and high-quality photography reaching back to 2005.
XV and RAC carefully evaluate each figure and rate it on a non-numerical scale ranging from state-of-the-art to shoot yourself, using a special formula based on years of toy reviewing experience.
Text, photos, video, audio, informative awesome in every format. FigureReviews.com.
Welcome back to Paladin's Place, preferred provider of mechanized melee. This week, Superhero Time steps into the Wayback Machine for our power playback discussion as we view Chojin Sentai Jetman, a perfect example of Super Sentai's Golden Age. Jetman features the antics of five heroes with bird-like powers fighting off the evil Vairam invaders. Essentially, this story is a live-action remake of the prototype Sentai show, Science Ninja Team Gatchaman, which American audiences may recognize as Battle of the Planets, G-Force, or possibly Eagle Riders. An ambitious producer named Haim Saban attempted to use footage from this series to make a new show in America, but that project sadly never got off the ground. Undaunted, Mr. Saban tried again with the next year's Sentai, Zero Ranger. I think we all know how that turned out. Like all Golden Age Sentai merchandise, Jetman toys are incredibly hard to find. But through an unusual combination of circumstances, which resulted in me spending quite a bit more than I normally would even for this sort of thing, the Jetman mecha wound up on my shelves. So this time I'm offering my perspective on the residents of Sky Camp. These are the Jet Machines. Each Jet Machine roughly corresponds to the avian abilities of its driver. The lineup consists of Red Jet Hawk, Black Jet Condor, Yellow Jet Owl, Blue Jet Swallow, please refrain from laughing at that one.
Multiple entendre!
And finally, White Jet Swan. The machines are disappointingly average. They fall into the unfortunate pattern of older Zord sets, existing as little more than color-coded blocks with very few distinguishing characteristics outside of Red Zord. And the fact that yellow and blue require accessories to even resemble aircraft certainly doesn't help matters. The lack of individual play value is somewhat offset by the existence of a combined vehicle mode, a superjet known as Icarus Haken. The resulting fusion of jet machines is much more impressive than the individual forms, but this sort of combining wouldn't really be perfected until Time Ranger, 9 years later. But the ultimate fusion of jet machines is, of course, the mighty robot Jet Icarus. This Megazord design is very old school, blocky and simplistic combination that actually manages to blend Zord elements fairly well. The joints on my Jet Icarus are fairly loose, but given that this item is pushing 2 decades in age, that can be forgiven. Articulation is limited to arm rotation, making me somewhat depressed at how little Megazord movement has advanced over the years. Jet Icarus maintains a fairly impressive arsenal of weapons, including a flying fist attack. But the signature weapon of any Megazord, of course, is its sword and shield. This Burdonic Saber is a nice sample of the classic vacuum metal swords that have sadly disappeared from Sentai and Megazord releases. Offering a recommendation for Jet Icarus is mostly irrelevant, since, as I said, merchandise from these days is so incredibly hard to find you'll probably never get the chance to. But I will say that Icarus is a fine example of Megazord engineering. An oldie but a goodie in every sense of the phrase. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more Superhero Time!
Everybody, it's your old friend John DeLuna, and do you like video games? Do you like people who like video games? Well, if so, you gotta listen to New Soundwave. It's the weekly video game podcast of record. News, rumors, in-depth discussion of new and retro gaming, plus the occasional contest or giveaway. So if you game, you gotta listen to New Soundwave. Check us out at tfradio.net, a proud member of the Transformers Internet Radio Network.
The third strike, y'all, on the street, fight a three.
And now back to action with Superhero Time.
Okay, so let's jump into Jetman, this week's Power Playback.
It's time for Power Playback on Superhero Time.
So, Jetman's only been fan subbed recently, right?
Well, the first episode was subbed anyway. Grown-ups in spandex a while back, but it's only recently that they've started doing more episodes now that they actually are now that they've been able to track down Roz.
And before this, somebody was just doing the same kind of subs that Jew Ranger originally had, where people were reading episode guides and making up
or
the middle.
Well, actually, it was even worse than those, where it was there. That's what they were doing, and then selling the subs.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Ouch!
I don't remember the Jetman people selling those, but okay.
No, that was the like CS subs or something.
Okay, well, I'm probably going back farther than I can really remember anyway.
But yeah.
So, as Paladin spoiled in this week's review, Jetman was actually the series Saban tried to port over his Power Rangers first.
Well, one of them.
Well, the one before that was in the 80s, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, like Bioman or something.
Maybe it was Live Man, I don't know.
No, I think it was Bioman.
Hmm. Okay, so it was one of Doc's forms this week. Anyway...
One or the other.
In terms of modern attempts, which I use the term loosely, Jetman preceded what we finally did get as Power Rangers. And I can sort of see how Jetman maybe wouldn't have worked out quite well enough.
There's not nearly as much merchandising.
Plus, it's not as cool looking without the dinosaurs. I don't think bird hats really have the same effect as dinosaurs.
Yeah, not for little kids.
No. And really, I don't think the toys would have been as interesting either.
No.
As Paladin's review points out for us.
Yeah, from what I know the Jetman Mecha are huge, and they're the combined form of the two large ones is, from what I've heard, very, very unstable.
Yeah, it really seems like Mecha-wise, Sentai after Zyu Ranger kind of...
had a revolution.
Really yeah. That was one thing that...
Yeah, and Zyu Ranger was like one of the first ones that actually had a very, very distinct combined form.
Yeah.
Jet Icarus isn't that big, but Garuda is pretty huge.
And yeah, their combined form?
Yeah, that's definitely pretty big. But I've never had any problems with the stability.
Well, I think it's more the durability, considering how many of the... A lot of the combining joints are... these huge clips that look like they're going to be able to be very easily broken.
Doesn't the Astro Delta Megazord have a problem with durability combining?
Not really.
Hmm. I thought there was little parts that could break in that process, too.
They can, but they're... Some of the ones that I had, those little clips that are on the lower legs of the Astro Megazord, even if those break... that's not going to affect the stability of the combined form at all. Because all that's going to do is mean that, okay, those little gray shin pieces that are on a tightish joint anyway, aren't going to just have a clip up on the top.
Okay, so, you know, Jew Ranger was also convenient to adapt into Power Rangers because it was the first Sentai series in the start of the trend of having... six Rangers by series end.
Yeah. Everything just kind of worked out just right for it, I think.
More or less. I mean, there was a few series along the way that didn't, but for the most part, they kind of jumped on at the right time.
Yeah.
Plus,
dinosaurs are awesome anyway.
Right.
No matter what time.
Yes.
And also, you will
robot
see
dinosaurs
some,
in particular.
Jack Icarus's cockpit is... it was used for the Megazord cockpit. So.
Yeah, they just redressed it a little bit.
Yeah.
Which was smart and economical.
Kind of uncharacteristic, too. Makes you wonder if there was a budget problem between the series.
Well, maybe they were still paying off Leopardon.
Well, that was kind of before Super Sentai was going downhill, because that was a couple of years later, wasn't it?
Huh?
Like, I mean... ratings and merchandise-wise?
No.
It seems to be a bit of a misconception that Sentai almost died with O-Ranger.
Well, not so much almost died, just that it wasn't quite doing quite as well. The impression I always got, like, around O-Ranger.
O-Ranger had the best toy sales to date.
Damn.
But the
why
worst
do I always, why
reception
do I always
to the
read
actual
that?
Show.
Oh. That's where I hear it from then. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, because O-Ranger's toy sales were the best at their time.
O-Ranger had some
that
pretty
I actually
cool...
did not know, because I always just keep hearing people always harp up how terribly it did.
O-Ranger had some pretty cool toy designs.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, mecha
and there were issues with the show, but that was more production due to have retooling the series after, like, those sarin gas attacks. And plus, with Sentai, Toei doesn't... the way they that Toei and Bandai judge the success of the series has been toy sales.
Which is true. As they should, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've seen that with some other Toei shows and Bandai merchandise. If the merchandise doesn't move, the show just they forget about it.
Like Dragon Knight.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah.
But not surprising.
Did we come back from break or not?
Yeah, we're back from break. We're actually in the middle of
And I actually learned something.
We're in the middle of the power playback segment right now.
Which means which of course means we're vastly off topic.
It's so hard to tell with us, you know?
Yes, we are somewhat off topic, but we're not, you know, we're still in the general realm of tokusatsu.
We're still talking about toku.
Yes. That's the important difference right there.
You're listening to Superhero Time, going completely off subject.
Okay, so for Power Playback this week, we watched the first two episodes of Jetman, just to be able to have at least one sequence of the full team together. I have no idea how much farther into the show before the robot appears, but I wasn't willing to put that much time into it. Hey, I might as well be honest, right? Fort Max, they've subbed the first five episodes of Jetman.
First four, the fifth one when it went out. Apparently, they hadn't made they hadn't finished subbing it yet.
What?
Oops.
I suspect someone was drunk when they released that thing.
What the hell?
Well, you know, there's a reason that particular group is not my first choice in subtitles. Of course, that's not actually the reason why that is, but it seemed like a good point to mention that.
Well, the lead guy is Belgian, so...
Well, that explains the stilted English. So, in the episodes
but
that they
still
have...
It's better, but still, it's more translated than the stuff TV Nihon releases.
It's also more translated than not being translated at all, by which I mean, nothing subbing it. Well, I was thinking... more translated versus nobody subbing it at all.
This is true.
Okay, so within those first four episodes, has the robot appeared yet?
Yes.
Which episode?
The robot itself, I believe, first appears in four.
Uh-huh.
Though the combined jet form appears the prior episode.
Ah. Yeah, that was one thing I liked about the Jetman mecha concept, where even the first robot had the ability to turn into a giant jet thing.
Yeah.
It kind of kept a theme between the main robots.
Yeah.
I still say that was done better in Time Ranger.
Well, I have no doubt that it was, but it was still a neat thing to do in 1991.
Yeah.
And I think it was a little bit cooler than the following year's Dino Tanker.
Yeah.
They half transferred it halfway and realized, oh, wait, this can kind of work.
Well, of course, the difference is that it doesn't completely come apart again between the Megazord and Dino Tanker forms.
Yeah, that is one advantage.
Yeah, but it's sort of.
Okay, so in the near future of 1991, a space station watches the world.
It's 1990X.
Well, yeah, but later it would be established as being in 1991.
And I'm pretty sure that I've seen that same space station get blown up many other times in other shows.
It's entirely possible.
That could happen.
Any disturbance to the world's peace is responded to with the military police force commanded from the space station, called Skyforce.
Somehow that disturbs me just a little bit.
It should.
Big Brother is watching you.
Big Brother and their space police. But today...
And probably every kid who's ever been on that thing. Because we all know how they...
Yes, security clearance, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. So today, Skyforce is responding to a small robot run amok with a big laser.
But unfortunately, their space station doesn't have any exoframes.
Oh. The officers on the scene, Ryu and Rie, trying not to get those confused now, managed to spectacularly save a baby flung in the air as a result of the robot's rampage. Don't know how that works. And button mash the robot back under control. Because button mashing solves everything.
And they defeated a Dalek that looks even cheaper than the original Dalek.
I like that it had a cancel button on it.
The only thing that would have been better is if it had an overload button.
With the space, with it as two words.
Right. Yes, because we will never escape the shame of bot. So back on the space station, Earth ship. If it's a station, why is it called ship?
Because it's Japan and that's English.
Okay, so their commander congratulates them for their excellent work by nominating them for the J Project, bombarding them with strange radiation to make them supermen.
Which, of course, anyone in Japan would volunteer for.
Well, Rie is rightly concerned about being turned into some kind of mutant, but the commander hand-waves her concerns. Ryu and Rie, having a difficult enough time keeping their hands off each other already, worry about being split into different units. But the commander explains Jetman works as a 5-man team before having to refocus their attention on her. Really, if their relationship is supposed to be hidden, it's probably the worst-kept secret in Skyforce.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, you're good friends, I know.
But about that time, some mysterious rock is flying through space. It's time now for the candidates to be irradiated with Burdonic waves. 5 soldiers are assembled, each to be bombarded with a different color beam one at a time. Ryu is up first, but just as the excruciatingly painful bombardment is completed and the next victim is lined up, Earthship comes under attack. Saved by the bell. A blue-skinned man appears to the crew of the space station and the people of Earth. Declaring himself a representative of the Virum, he says he's conquered many dimensions, and this one is next. To prove their power, they're going to destroy the Earthship. Thus begins a mad dash to evacuate the space station. Earthship quickly takes severe damage, and the hull fails in the corridor where Ryu, Rie, and the commander are trying to find escape. Rie is blown out into space despite Ryu's best efforts to pull her back in. In his grief, he starts to try to follow her outside, but the commander pulls him back just as a shutter seals the hull breach.
He's a Jetman now. Maybe they can breathe in space.
Jetman, not Batman. Ryu's still not ready to give up on her, so the commander punches him in the gut and drags him to the Jethawk. Strong lady.
Yeah, considering he's already a, you know, super powerful mutant.
As the attack carries on, the Burdonic wave device is broken, and beams are emitted from each of the broken reaction chambers, eventually breaking through the outer hull and striking random people on Earth. Jethawk escapes Earthship just before it explodes. With the first task finished, Radagay, the commander of Virum, appears in the sky again and releases a monster onto the surface. At the Sky Camp, the terrestrial base for the Jetman, Ryu wakes up. He's still kind of devastated over the death of Rie, but the commander beats him some more and tells him to suck it up.
I like her.
He's a Jetman now, and he has a job to do. Ryu can't believe he has any chance fighting against the people who destroyed the Earthship, and somehow she puts together that the Burdonic waves struck random people on the ground and tells Ryu they need to go find them.
Who experienced far less pain than he did, apparently.
Or at least they focused on it a lot less.
This is true.
The monster sent down a little while ago, the dimension bug, is meanwhile hard at work, eating people. And much like your mom, her ass grows a little more with everything she consumes. Meanwhile, Ryu and the commander have found their first victim, Kaori, the daughter of a well-off family who was struck with the white Burdonic wave. Thinking about what they had to say a bit, she's on board pretty quickly once they clear up she's become a Jetman and not a gentleman. She wanted to get away from her boring life anyway. Next up is Rita, who was hit with the yellow wave. But he doesn't want anything to do with this and just attend his garden instead. Kaori wants to keep trying to convince him, so Ryu and the commander resume their search. Suddenly, and for no particular reason, Retigay's hand appears in the sky again, and he drops off some pod people in the vegetable field.
Apparently they need to eat too.
Outraged by them trampling all over his crops, Rita tries to fight them off with gardening tools, but is quickly knocked down. Kaori calls for Ryu to come back and help, but instead of driving back to the farm, he and the commander go to Sky Camp, and Ryu takes off in Jethawk. While he's taking the scenic route, Rita and Kaori are fleeing for their lives.
Yeah, the Jetmen are kind of dicks, aren't they?
Not half the dicks. They're not half the dicks the Die Rangers are.
No, that's all condensed into one of them.
Well, yes, we'll get
to that
one. So I guess they didn't really explain to Kaori about how to transform into a Jetman when they gave her the cross changer.
Useful information to have.
Yeah, you'd think that would be important, wouldn't you?
They never really showed explaining it to the Red Ranger before he jumps out of the Jethawk.
Yes, Ryu arrives, and his amazing entrance is leaping out of the cockpit of Jethawk and transforming in free fall into Red Hawk. He throws a cross changer on Rita's wrist and tells them both they need to transform before the dimension bug wraps him up in her tongue. Again,
this is exactly what
it
sounds like.
Yes, context is everything here. Kaori and Rita are still running away and get blown off of a cliff. A really, really damn high cliff.
Didn't realize there were cliffs like that in Japan.
Who knew? Ryu tells them again to push the button and transform already, and when faced with falling to their deaths, they actually listen this time. They fly back up over the edge of the cliff, and while Kaori seems to have picked up flying with a Jetman suit pretty easily, Rita crashes into some trees.
Poor Rita.
Even being transformed, they still have no idea how to fight and mostly just get tossed around while Ryu gets rid of the pod people and damages the dimension bug enough for Retigay to pull her out of the fight.
I do like the way they just kind of cower behind the Red Ranger.
Ryu laments on the others not being ready for this yet, and the commander says it's hopeless anyway if they don't find the last two Jetmen.
Yeah, it's certainly a different way of introducing a team than we're used to nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And also, one thing that is different is that usually if it's either the entire team has absolutely no idea what they're doing, or it's just the Red Ranger that has no idea what they're doing.
Right. Yeah, this is a little bit different since he's the only professional on the team.
Yeah, but still, he doesn't fully understand what he's doing, but he's actually military guy, so...
Yeah, he's trained, he's able to fight and operate the machinery
correctly.
He's
just it's more of the only thing he doesn't understand is all this new stuff he's been given.
Yeah. But, you know, he can fly the bird jet thing, and...
Yeah.
That's what's important. He knows how to jump out of it. So, in the next episode, we find ourselves in a casino watching a hand of poker being played out.
Before the first episode ends, we meet the rest of the Vairam.
Well, yeah, but that isn't very important.
And you have, one of the robots likes walking on the walls while smoking a cigarette.
Yes, and in the next episode, he's simultaneously smoking a cigarette and drinking alcohol. And this is the robot.
And then there's the kid with lipstick.
And 80s glasses. Well, actually, it's 80s future glasses.
From the early 90s.
Right.
And of course also Red Ranger's not actually dead love interest.
You gave away the ending for it, Max.
It's 20 years old. The spoiler limit is passed.
Hey, if I haven't seen it, it's still a spoiler to me.
Neither have I, but it's kind of obvious given that they're just played by the same person.
Yeah, and they focus on her at the very end of the episode.
Shut up. Shut up!
Even though they try to cover it.
Dinobot dies.
Don't bring logic into this podcast.
Well, there's been no place for it so far. Okay, so in the next episode, Casino, Hand of Poker. Despite winning with a straight flush, the winner declines his chips and even offers up what he's already won. The prize he's after is the lady player he just beat. And seems he's won on that count as they leave together.
Usually you just need a nickel for that kind of thing.
This lady does not look anything like your mom, thank you.
Guy has more discerning tastes.
Of course, you know, this is, 25 years old.
20?
Oh, whatever. 2 decades later, she might look like your mom, you never know. But they're stopped in the alley, and Guy is accused of cheating by a man from the casino. Intent on issuing a painful lesson against such things, the tables are turned when Guy punches him halfway down the alley. He is understandably a little freaked out over this and takes off running, even leaving his evening's hookup behind. Sad guy. Meanwhile, the search for more jetmen continues. Ryu's in the Jethawk, with the commander flying alongside in a more normal jet, and Kaori and Raita being driven by her butler. The scene changes to a school, and specifically vaulting practice. One student knocks down the bar, catching the notice of a girl walking by. Having a bit of an odd vision, she decides to go give it a try and clears the bar without even trying.
And flashing most of the crowd in the process.
Well, that was cleverly edited out, so that didn't actually happen.
No wonder they were so happy afterwards.
Yeah, there's a reason you don't do high jump in a skirt. The other students are amazed, and I think we know why. While the coach begs her to join the team, and I think we know why. She agrees, but not for the reason you expect. No, she demands pay for her work, promising to break the record for the school. At the same time, Ryu and the commander detect the signal of the black Burdonic wave, while Kaori and Raita have locked onto blue. In the Viren base Vyrock... Really?
Really?
I bet they stole that from the Fraggles. Radagay takes an egg from the dimension bug. In his hand, it hatches into a small, gross-looking bug. Small compared to its mother, anyway. But everything's small compared to your mother. Noticing Jethawk and the commander's jet flying around, Radagay decides it's a perfect target and casts the little bug at the jet. The bug crawls along the skin of the plane until it finds a nice spot to attach, and the plane starts to transform.
And first, starts tentacle raping the commander.
I was just going to say, tentacles emerge from many of the cockpit instruments and try to attack the commander.
Right.
The jet then grows arms and has been turned into Dimension Fighter. Before it can go...
Dimension Gerwalk.
Before it can go any farther, the commander pulls the eject lever and escapes relatively safely.
That's the real reason Saban didn't bring Jetman over. Harmony Gold threatened a lawsuit.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah.
Ryu and the Dimension Fighter trade fire as they pass, but Ryu lets it go, knowing he can't beat it without the rest of the team together. Or so he thinks right now, just wait till later. Back at the school, the high jump contest is underway. Akko, the high jump girl from before, is up next, and she asks for the bar to be raised to 8 feet, which she again clears with no problem. As she's busy being the center of attention, Kaori's car pulls up. The Burdonic wave detector is having a fit, and Kaori tells Akko to get in the car, because they have something important to talk about. Elsewhere, the card cheat from earlier is playing saxophone in a classy bar.
Classy as your mom, I think.
Well, it's classy being that there's, like, you know, lighting, and people are dressed up reasonably, and there's no, like, obvious hookers at the bar. Obvious. Well, you know they're there anyway, but they're not, like, making a point of it. In the middle of his performance, his strength flares up and he crushes his instrument.
Which also sounds wrong out of context.
Yes. That is the theme for today's episode. As he stands trying to figure out what's going on, Ryu grabs his shoulder. Cut back to Vyrock, the dimension bug sheds her ass. But Renegade tells her the job isn't over yet and that she should go back to Earth and cause as much destruction as she likes. Which pretty much means that her useful life is over, and she might as well just go and do whatever she can with what little time remains. In the meantime, Ryu and the commander have brought Guy up to speed. But Guy doesn't care that much about if the world ends, and makes his case for why people suck. And you know, he makes a pretty convincing case. But on the other hand, I hate people anyway, so I might be a little biased.
Yeah, that might...
People do suck, so...
Yeah.
Yeah,
this guy is a lot angrier than the new guy.
Yes. The fact that Guy's my favorite character in this is probably telling on my own personality.
Well, you know, I especially can relate to Guy's feelings about this when I'm driving. Because yes. Nobody has a damn clue how to drive.
Yes.
And I mean, this is the South I'm in. And if there is even half an inch of snow on the ground, people go crazy.
Yes, they do.
And turn into bigger idiots than usual.
Work at a grocery store. Trust me, I know.
Well, I don't mean that way, though. I just mean in regard to driving.
Oh, well, yes.
Because, you know, they don't know how to cope with any amount of snow on the road.
Well, people up north, it'll be 7 feet high, and they'll be going 70 miles an hour.
Well, you know, up in the north, people have snow plows on their cars.
Yes.
But back to the topic at hand. Guy has no interest in teaming up with anyone anyway, and especially not Ryu, who he finds to rub him the wrong way. A fist fight breaks out as the commander looks on, reflecting how stupid men are.
Well, how stupid like all men are, or how stupid these men are?
From her perspective, it's probably all about the same. Kaori and Raita are talking things over with Akko, who is much more agreeable than Guy, but her cooperation hinges on just one thing. What's the salary? Kaori understands, sort of, and doesn't hesitate to write her a check.
And Akko was asking yen. For a really low amount, actually.
Well, that was an hourly rate.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood that.
I think so the subtitling misunderstood it more than anything else.
She's basically asking for $20 an hour. At least that's what it would be nowadays.
Right.
So I was thinking like, damn, that is really low.
So Kaori writes her a 10 million yen check. Score?
He seems to think so.
Kaori straps on the cross changer, and just in time, since the dimension bug, for some reason, appears before them specifically. Unencumbered of its ass is probably more dangerous now or something, too.
Faster.
I just wanted an excuse to say unencumbered of its ass.
Something your mom will never have to say.
Thank you. Guy and Ryu are still fighting, but get interrupted as Raita calls Ryu for help. Ryu and the commander take off while Guy just keeps looking pissed and chases after them to finish the fight. Priorities, you know.
Of course.
Ryu again skips going directly anywhere and picks up Jethawk again. Possibly this is a bad move, too, since Dimension Fighter reappears and he has to go deal with that before he can help the others. Guy is still riding around trying to find Ryu and stops by a crowd of people watching the fight in the air. Conveniently, just as Dimension Fighter swoops down to grab a hostage, which just happens to be Guy.
Of course it does.
Yeah. Ryu decides to clip Dimension Fighter's arm with Jethawk's wing, which causes it to drop Guy. Dimension Fighter goes down in smoke and flame, and Ryu jumps out of Jethawk to have a conversation with Guy as he's falling to his death. He throws a cross changer on Guy's wrist and basically gives him no option but to become a Jetman.
It's a really good toss for falling, you know, that fast.
Yeah, really. And it's amazing how Ryu can catch up with him like that, too.
Ryu is very good at falling to his death.
Well, with no, he's style. He's not going to fall to his death because he has a cross changer and a winged suit. So, you know, he can transform and fly away.
Yes. Well, falling to what would be most other people's deaths.
Yes, Ryu is very good at falling to other people's deaths. Guy transforms, and he and Ryu fly to the ground. Only at that point does Raita figure out that the rest of them should also go ahead and transform, too. They all get together on the ground, and just in time for a grounded Dimension Fighter to reappear. Ryu attacks the Jet Monster directly, while the others head for the pod people supporting it. What are the little foot soldiers called, anyway?
Hold on, I'll look it up.
I didn't see it mentioned anywhere in the episode, and usually they name everything.
Grinnum High.
Okay, pod people then. Guy is effective in fighting them, and has no problem fighting dirty either.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Crotch grab! He and Akko are both more effective their first time out than Kaori and Raita, although they're getting a little bit better, too. Ryu can't be upset.
Sounds like they could get worse, right?
This is very true.
After all, not the Go-Sagers.
Yeah. Ryu can't be upstaged, though. Remember I said earlier how he expected he didn't have a chance on his own against the Dimension Fighter?
Guess what? He lied.
He notices that there's a leaking fuel line in the monster and uses his gun to ignite the jet fuel and single-handedly explode the monster.
Tommy, eat your heart out.
The fight's not over, though. Just the cool part of it is. The Dimension Bug reappears and goes on the attack. Ryu instructs the others to combine their swords and guns into slightly bigger guns, and the four of them shoot the Dimension Bug, enclosing it in an energy bubble. At the same time, it seems to be lifting it towards some kind of hole in space. But it's not working with just four of them firing, and Ryu asks Guy why he isn't contributing to the team.
Because he's a douche.
Well, Guy complains he doesn't like Ryu giving him orders. So, yeah.
He's a douche.
He's a douche.
Well, he's not like a Zane douche, but yeah. The Dimension Bug tries to free itself by firing an attack back at the Jet Ben, and being struck by the energy blast, Guy is angered into finally acting. With all five beams, the monster is destroyed. Seemingly, the hole in space was an unimportant part of this.
I think it was trying to escape, because in the first episode, that it escaped through one of those holes.
Well, in the first episode, it escaped when Radagate cut a hole for it.
Yeah, but I think it looked about the same, didn't it?
Seemed different to me, but okay. The Vyrum are watching from their base and admit that, at least for humans, these guys aren't too bad. Tran, the kid with the retro future glasses we talked about
before.
And
the power glove.
That's so
and
bad.
A somewhat appropriate name.
Anyway, he suggests that whoever manages to beat Jetman should become the official leader of the group. Everybody seems on board with that, even the robot who is smoking and drinking.
I don't think he cares about anything at that point, except for the fact that he has his cigarette and he has his booze.
With the battle over, Akko returns Kaori's check, realizing that fighting to save the world is more important than getting a salary. And Raita and Ryu are happy with this, and they all join hands with the heat. But Guy is off by himself on his motorcycle trying to light a cigarette. Ryu walks over and grabs Guy's lighter and gets it to catch, offering it back to him now. Guy's response is to knock Ryu on his ass with a punch to the face.
In any other show, that would have been completely different.
Guy says that all he wanted was to get his revenge and doesn't want to join the team anyway. He throws his cross-changer down and warns the others not to come after him anymore. Guy rides away, but Ryu is determined to keep stalking him until he joins the team. This can't turn out badly. The end.
Damn, guy's a douche.
I suddenly understand why Gokaiger guy has the name he does, considering all his powers come from douchebags. So, of course, his name comes from a douchebag.
Works for me. It's okay, Go, because this guy will also eventually die.
Exactly, which is why I keep saying Gokai Silver needs to eventually die horribly. Just, you know,
he's doomed.
It seemed right that way.
Well, this guy dies pretty horribly, being stabbed in the stomach.
Yeah.
So, but yes, that was the first two episodes of Jetman. What did you guys think?
I liked it.
It definitely shows its age in a few points, but yeah, it's pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, it's different from what we're getting. It's a lot different from what we're getting now, just the way it paces itself.
Yeah.
And it's a lot less merchandise driven.
Which is weird for a toy commercial. I guess it worked a little different in the first episode,
three of them appear, and two of them get their asses kicked.
Yeah. And there's only a little bit of face time for the transformation device.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, now it's all up in your face every chance they get.
Does the other bracelet on the left hand actually do anything?
Yes.
It does when they have the robots.
Ah, okay.
I think it's also their communicator.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
So, yeah, there is a purpose to having the two devices. It's not like the Xenizers where, hey, it's two pieces.
Yeah, Jetman was always a series I had read a lot about but had not seen any of. So... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too.
Both Zio and Die Ranger had the two pieces for why not.
Right. and Kiba Ranger's device was even more why not, since it wasn't even two wrist devices.
Right. It was basically a recolored one recolored wrist device and something else on a keychain.
Right. It was basically the precursor to the Car Ranger thing.
But the cross changer is a pretty impressive morpher.
Well, yeah. It's one of the things I like about older Sentai, which is how more simple the transformation devices are. You know, they're more like fancy wristwatches than what came later on.
Well,
digital watches?
Especially Dynaman.
Yes. But I think the ultimate extension of that style was in Power Rangers in Space with the Astromorpher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's at least the most fun one I've seen.
I'd now like to get all cell phones all the time.
Yeah, I know. I'd like to get back to some wrist-worn devices just because I'm sick of the damn phones.
And then when we get something that isn't a phone, it's a damn card reader.
Which is still almost a phone, too, in functionality.
Which still works as a phone in the stupid show.
Right.
And it's big and clunky and not really all that attractive.
And we'll get face.
But your mother.
The Digimorpher is definitely the most pretty much the only believable phone morpher that's believable as a phone.
Pretty much. I mean, it's the right size and shape.
Yeah, because, I mean, I like the mobile rights, but it's huge.
And plus, even though the Digimorpher's a bit... I had cell phones that... there are cell phones that are more recent than the Digimorpher that were bigger than the Digimorpher was, so...
Yeah. Ironically, the Mobirites might have been a more appropriate morpher back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Well, the Gokai Cellular certainly would have been, you know, Gokai Bag Phone. But, you know, it's funny, on that account, the American cell phone morphers, when the toys get redone by Bandai America, they're almost more right for the theme when they're downsized.
Yeah.
Even if they're no more convincing looking.
Yeah.
Like, if you put a Mystic Morpher and a Magiphone next to each other, there's a pretty significant difference in size, but the American one, if it didn't have all the crazy lines and designs on it, it would, and, you know, turn into a magic wand, it would actually be more believable as a cell phone.
I like the Jetman weapons a lot, too.
Do they have individual weapons, or is it just the sword and the gun? I can't remember.
There's a gauntlet thing, too, but, I mean, that's also a thing that goes across the team.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of like Gokaiger there, where they all have the same weapons.
Yeah, I don't think there's, like, power weapons.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a while since I read up on it.
Right, they get universal weapons like different lasers and shit.
Yeah, where all the special weapon budget went was for the robot. With its, like, wrecking balls and swords and rocket punches and stuff.
But, yeah, they all had the same wing gauntlet things, and, they don't have any special weapons that...
Yeah, no power weapons.
Yeah.
Like I already said.
Which can also be interesting for simplicity's sake.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a way to be different, at least.
And there's a Jetman graphic novel that continued the story after the series ended.
Yeah. With Green something.
Eagle.
Green Eagle replacing Guy. And then there was also a novelization that ran alongside the series, I think.
And also, of course, one thing from Jetman did end up being used in Power Rangers. The Jet Striker, which is Red Hawk's Doom Buggy, ended up being reused. Ended up being used for the Douche Ranger.
Yeah, the Doom Buggy became the Douche Buggy.
Yes, and then apparently Zane sold it to Vipra. Oh,
well, he is a douche.
Yeah. Only when Zane had it, it didn't transform into a giant gun.
Well, that's a shame. But, you know, he would just, like, douche that up, too. Might have been actually good for something then.
He even had a Zord that turned into a giant gun.
Well, at least part of it did. Are you talking about Zane or Jetman?
Jetman.
Oh, okay, well, yeah, most of that turned into a gun.
All of it turned into a gun.
Except for the parts that got cut off later.
Hmm?
That didn't work so well anymore.
What?
At the end, part of Tetra thingy got cut apart.
Ah.
Then it didn't work so well anymore. But, you know, that I guess makes it where at the end of... during the fight in Doomsday where Megazord gets its arm cut off, it wasn't so new since Jetman did something similar mm-hmm. the year before.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we didn't know.
So we lost that half of the battle.
But no, if the subbing speed for Jetman picks up, I'll probably watch more of it. But on the other hand, I can't bother to wait a month between episodes or more.
Yeah, it's been going very kind of slow.
No, the speed might pick up after they're finished releasing Live Man.
Screw Live Man, I don't care about that.
Exactly.
Do the stuff I want to see. That's what I want to see. What?
And speaking of, Kaku Ranger Episode 2's been subbed, so...
How long after Episode 1?
Couple months.
Yeah.
I like how there's a lot of people trying to do a bunch of sub stuff, but it's just, I can't get that interested in it when there's only a couple episodes, and I don't know if they're going to carry through with it.
It's still a better release rate than TV Nihon's Mega Ranger.
Oh, God, I want to watch Mega Ranger.
Well, you can watch up to episode, what, 21?
21.
Yeah.
And then go get the Raws for the rest.
Yeah. They released episode 21.
Well, it's been a hell of a long time since they released an episode of Fives, and one of those came out in the last couple of weeks.
And they may have only done that because people have started scrubbing it.
I think that's the reason behind that, too, which was another thing I was going to bring up. You know, there's Fives that they're doing that too, and now the same people who did Kuga are doing Kabuto that way.
Yeah. Someone's doing Go-Onger, Shinkinger too, I think.
And Magiranger.
Magiranger.
Yeah, the same person that's doing Shinkinger is doing Magiranger.
Yeah, I mean, so that's something anyway.
There's a...
What?
Hello?
There's a...
It's a trap? He lost you for a minute there, Paladin.
Yeah, never mind then.
Well,
oh,
now
we hear you.
Yes, now we're kind of curious. Now we actually care about what you're saying.
Tim Curry.
I think we lost him again. I'll just put a Tim Curry there. Okay, so...
yeah, and also, reportedly, they're working on TV Nihon's also reportedly starting work on Time Ranger again.
Now Overtime's doing that too now.
Overtime
in association with the other superhero Time is doing Time Ranger, yeah. Yeah, that's not transparent, is it?
Can somebody just do Agito? Just well?
Oh, well? No.
Though also someone started doing scrubs of full subs of Ryuki.
What do you mean full subs?
Or well, I don't. Did TV Nihon do Ryuki?
Yes. Ryuki was the first series they did completely.
Okay, yeah, it's
scrubs. No, I thought it was. I thought Fives was the first series they did, and they went
chronologically. Ryuki's the first writer series they finished. I mean, they might have started with Fives, but Ryuki's done all the way through.
Yeah. Well, no, they've subbed Fives. They were just redoing it for DVDs, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, DVD source.
Yeah. So they've subbed through all Fives. It was just a long time ago.
I'm still waiting for them to finish going through and doing all the HD versions of Denno.
I don't think there are HD versions.
There are.
Oh, yeah.
Writers have been in HD since Kabuto aired.
Mm.
So they're in the process of doing the HD versions for Denno. They've recently finished doing Kiva.
But where are they
HD.
Getting the HD from?
Whoever encodes it.
Because it would have to be the old TV rips.
It is. I mean, there's probably Blu-rays out for it by now. No?
No. None of the O's and Go Kaiju are the first, I think, are the first series.
I think that's right.
O's is the first writer series to be released on Blu-ray.
Okay.
I just also want decent video quality for Kuga.
That would be nice. And Agito, really.
And the thing is, I think the – I'm not sure if I'm remembering this correctly, but I think the Kuga DVDs were letterboxed to begin – or letterboxed in there, so
– I would explain things.
But Agito's are not. So there's no excuse for that one.
Yeah, and also – Five Man, Volume 1 DVD should be coming out this month, I think. So after Five Man is finished, there are only two Sentai series left to come out on DVD.
Which are?
Live Man and Turbo Ranger.
Interesting.
But still, it is nice that there's more groups getting on board and going back and doing, you know, more older series that haven't been touched before.
Yeah. The people doing the first Kamen Rider actually seem like they're on their way to doing it consistently.
Yeah. And the weeks that they don't have an episode of Kamen Rider.
Well, yeah, but no, they've been actually putting them out at a decent pace.
They've been putting out an episode every week, and when it's the weeks that they don't put out an episode of Kamen Rider, they put out an episode of the other Kamen Rider.
Sky Rider, which is the
title of that series is Kamen Rider.
Right.
Right.
It just became known as Sky Rider later on.
Well,
and then Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amazon. Ah, old jokes.
That'll never die.
So back to Jetman for just a second.
Okay.
How do we think the Gokaigers will handle meeting the Jetman?
I guess it depends which one they meet.
Maybe if that's a guy dies and he meets guy in heaven or hell.
No, it would be just that white room.
Besides, guy wouldn't meet guy because guy's not a six like guy is.
However, they wouldn't meet him in the white room. They would meet him at that, since he's dead, they would meet him at those pillar things.
But no, they would, you know, meet and something would happen and then they'd get power.
Or not.
Well, they'd get a power. It's to be determined if it would be, you know, useful. Or merchandised or used at all.
Power to die.
Power of mushroom hair.
Power of love triangles. That comes up later in the series, too.
Yeah.
Or power of weddings, because they have several of those.
Yes, well, Jetman was Jetman.
Which is not entirely a bad thing.
No, it's not. And it will be less of a bad thing when it's all subbed and you can watch it all at a quick pace instead of waiting a long time between episodes.
Then we just have to wait a long, long time for it to be fully subbed.
Well, for me, that's less of a problem than, you know, going a bit at a time.
Yes.
I'm patient in some ways, but really impatient in others.
I'm just impatient in general.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so for next week, we're watching Jungle Fury.
Oh, God. That sounds ominous.
Well, we are watching Jungle Fury.
Exactly.
So, look for that to go up on Twitter this Friday afternoon.
Look for Superhero Times Power Playback every Friday afternoon on Twitter at TF Radio.
So, I think that's our show for this week.
Okay, then.
Because we probably talked about more than is worth talking about.
Even for us.
Yes. Well, it's mostly thanks to Ken actually having something to say.
Yay.
And filling in for Mickey's absent personality.
I don't know
well,
about
this
that,
is but... Ken, so wouldn't it be thanks to say?
Yes, things to say.
I was waiting for that.
Thank you. Well, you know, I tried to earlier, but...
I missed it.
I don't think I hit it strongly enough that time. Hit your mom strongly enough.
For a nickel.
Alright, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
So long.
This has been Superhero Time. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at stitcher.com. Superhero Time is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.
Asshole.
Oh, sorry. I was just fiddling with it. weren't you the one saying you were glad you didn't get one anyway?
I can still call you an asshole, though.
Okay.
Plus, that's rational.
I can live with that.
Plus, that's more of rationalization for, since he can't have one, it doesn't matter. You didn't want one anyway.
Of course.
Well, if I can't manage to get one, I might as well turn it into something I can work with.
Exactly.
Well, maybe next year's change your device will be interesting too, and I can get one of those instead.
But you won't, because everyone will buy them in advance anyway.
Well, that, and I expect next year's Sentai to be a lot less compelling than Gokaiger.
Well, it's kind of hard, because Gokaiger is kind of like doing like two or three different things at once, which is why it has like only two or three filler episodes. Like complete filler episodes anyway.
Well, and Gokaiser is just an amazing production in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, nothing next year is going to be able to live up to it.
Yeah, Gokaiger is, one thing it does is take some of the, couple of the ideas behind Decade, but changes them to good, changes a few things and also executes the stuff well.
Yes.
That's the main thing.
Execution is a good thing.
Yeah.
For one thing, Gokaiger has a functional story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Gokaiger also so far has not changed its main writer halfway through.
And also, so far, hasn't had trouble making up its mind whether the lead character is a nice guy or just an asshole.
And also, the Gokaigers are competent.
Extreme, yeah. Unlike, poor Yusuke.
No, actually, I was just thinking of the Gosagers.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we're back to the Sentai comparison. But Ken's not wrong either.
Poor Yusuke.
Yusuke.
It could use some
Narutaki. Yeah, I mean, the series.
Everything could use some Narutaki.
Yeah, we could do with a bit of Narutaki.
Yeah.
I want Narutaki to just randomly show up and Gokaiger just passing through and then never be heard from again. That would be in character.
Especially if he yells into a fan.
Yes, the Decade Net movies were good like that. I'm thinking.
Oh, and speaking of, just the.
I'm thinking Formax is going to interrupt me again.
Oh, the holy ending to this week's O's, and then the preview, and then going into an ad for the Net Movie DVD.
Yeah, it's like AG is going to go batshit insane, and now watch this comical thing for a movie. Goofy thing here.
That is kind of how O's goes, you know, wandering between batshit insane and another kind of batshit insane.
Yes, Maki kind of batshit insane, which is actually the same thing.
But no, I'm thinking after, you know, how much of a high note Gokaiger is, we're probably going to have to just assume that next year's Sentai might as well look like Gosager again.
Well, it might not be as bad as Gosager. It could just be, you know, like Shinkenger or something.
Nothing and no one can look like the Gosagers again.
The point is, I don't think we're really going to enjoy it quite as much as we would otherwise.
Granted, that's what we were saying about O's.
Well, that's a little bit of a different situation. You know, a lot of us started with writers on Double, and of course, kind of hard to see anything living up to that afterward, and Odes has only partly succeeded in that, I would say.
I just kind of try to go in not expecting it to live up to something like that. I just expect it to be good, which is why Ghost Ager was so disappointing.
Yeah, really.
Shinkenger was good. Ghost Ager was terrible.
Shinkenger was good. Goanger was excellent. I loved Geki Ranger. So, you know, after 3 years like that, Ghost Ager is very much of a letdown, to say the least. And it's a shame, too, because the costumes were so good.
Yeah.
Or at least they
were. And the Zords,
until,
too.
At least they were until the Ghost Agers tainted them.
The direction on the fights in some of the early episodes with just the mecha was great. But nothing else was. I didn't even like the on-foot stuff.
Hopefully they can surprise us next year and still produce something really enjoyable like we have this year. Counting on it.
One interesting coming up next week, though, is the fact that they have Boken Red, and he was in the movie. So that means just because they were in that movie does not mean they won't be in the show.
Okay.
And, of course, their great power is...
the shovel sword.
The pickaxe shovel sword.
At least this one does something. They've had two in a row that have just kind of been like, well, here it is.
Okay, here's the question, though. Is there a Bokanger power-up toy for Gokaio?
No, I think this is like the baseball bat.
Okay, so this is just
like
a
it's like the
base dug
yeah,
out of the closet.
Like the baseball bat or the Geki Rangers.
Yeah.
Or the counts as a treasure, though.
Right. Or the Ghost Agers, which they mentioned for all 5 seconds and used for all 5 seconds, and then that's it.
What was the Ghost
which
Ager
is all
power
they're
again?
Worth.
Well, you can get those toys.
Yes, but regardless, it still was not something they focused much on.
Let's see here. Here's a power that we're going to use in something other than what we got it in, and it's last year's toy.
Unlike Shinkenger, the previous show, which gets two episodes leading up to it, the next big power-up, and then Goanger, which was the show before Shinkenger, 2 years before Ghost Ager, which gets the whole cluster combination.
And right? It's even a new engine.
Exactly. Yeah. So they're going all out for – they went all out for Shinkenger. They're going really all out for Goanger.
And of course, for Ghost Ager here, get last year's toys and a few stands.
Yeah.
Get some SH figure art stands and just prop them up in front of Gokaio.
Even the toy makers don't like Ghost Ager.
Good.
This is what I've been saying. Like yeah, I said, the Mobi Rates comes with Goan Red and Shinken Red. And then they just toss Gosei Red in a pack later on.
Yeah. They're aware. They're aware.
They're quite aware.
But yeah, I mean, Shinkenger really got the a really good shake in this whole thing. It may have had to share a toy with a previous power-up, but it really came out well in its own
use. It was
use.
Obvious that the people in charge like Shinkenger.
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him for that.
I think the only reason we didn't get Takeru back in the Gokaiger episode is because he
aged something, right?
He's not attached to Toei anymore, I don't think.
Ah, yeah. But still, the replacement was not a bad idea.
No. It was suitable.
Yeah. It was still a Red Shinken Red. A Red Shinken Red.
Well, it was still a former Shinken Red.
Yes, there we go. It still works. The episode probably would have worked exactly the same, regardless if it was Kaoru or Takeru.
Well, except that if it was Takeru, they wouldn't have had the...
would have Hanba.
Right, and the opportunity to hit him with a fan.
Yes, which is has its own worth altogether.
Right.
I don't think they ever hit the Butler and Jetman with a fan. Shame, too.
Abused, subservient... helpers.
Well, it's Japan.
This is true. Navi certainly gets her abuse.
Well, the butler and Kabuto didn't really get abused either.
Wait, didn't we end the show like 20 minutes ago?
Think so.
Pretty much, yeah.
We're not even still doing the damn show when we're completely off topic.
It's okay, I can pull bits and pieces out of that and make an ender for the show.
The topic?
What?
So there's a topic?
There's
I don't
a
think
show?
So. There will be when I edit it together. Oh, yeah, Fort Mac, I need you to upload that first hour or whatever recording.
Okay.
Then, you know, send me the link like usual.
Okay.
But I got the... it recorded fine for the second part, so...
Okay.
I'm good on that. I told me you'd say okay again, but...
So was I.
M. Curry.
It just seemed... It just seemed like he was doing it without even listening to what I was saying.
It's like, yes, Mom. Yes, Mom.